Well, firstly, I'd like to say what a privilege it is to have been asked to give the address at this service. It's really lovely to be speaking somewhere where I feel so at home and where there's a friendly congregation. At least I hope it's a friendly congregation. This annual service of commemoration is a time when we gather together both to remember and honour those who have died, but also to recognise the needs of those of us who've been bereaved. It's a well-worn cliche that there are two certainties in life, death and taxes, and it's certainly true that bereavement is an experience that we all get to share in sooner or later. There's some comfort in knowing that we are part of a great community of bereaved people. But at the same time, we often feel that no one else can quite understand the unique nature of our own loss. I spend quite a lot of time thinking about such losses in my role as a civil celebrant, working with bereaved families to devise and conduct funeral services which are driven by the wishes and beliefs of the person who's died, or by the wishes and beliefs of the family and friends. Sometimes the services that I conduct are entirely secular, with no mention of God or any religious content. More often, though, they will include some spiritual content, often hymns, prayers, readings from the Bible or other religious books, and most importantly, memories and tributes to the person who has died. Today is a very welcome opportunity for me to thank the ministers and the whole community at St Mark's for supporting me in my training to do this work and in my continued practice with people who don't feel able to turn to the church or to an ordained person for this sort of help. It's a great privilege to be alongside people when they are enduring something as significant as a death. Contrary to popular opinion, it's also an incredibly life-affirming experience. Occasionally, I work in circumstances where bereavement brings out the worst of human behaviour, especially when a death is very unexpected or shocking. But mostly, what I see in my work is the very best of humankind. I see the vulnerable being incredibly brave. I see tenderness and sensitivity. I see thoughtfulness and practical acts of kindness and help. And I hear a lot of people remembering. And through those memories, I get a glimpse of many inspirational and unique personal life stories. And it's that aspect of my work that I want to talk to you about, the remembering part of it, and the importance of commemoration. At this time of year, our thoughts naturally tend towards remembrance. Autumn is a very complicated season, I think, with a mix of evolved and evolving traditions, harking back to very sort of primitive rituals about the turning of the year. The Christian feasts of All Saints and All Souls take place, and of course we wear poppies and we think about those that we've lost in conflicts. These formal commemorations can evoke very ambivalent feelings, though. And that's the thing about remembering. For example, we want to honour those who gave their lives for our freedoms, but at the same time, we don't want to glorify combat. And that ambivalence is one of the great challenges of remembering. Often it's very difficult. Remembering will bring back the pain of loss. It may be freighted with guilt, especially if our relationship with the dead person was a difficult one. Often, when we're bereaved, we feel that we have left things undone. There were actions we did or didn't perform, words we didn't say, or words that we now regret. And not all deaths are a gentle slipping away, and sometimes the shock or the raw physicality of what has happened just won't leave us in our memories. My own father died in the spring of this year, and one of the things that I have found most difficult since is being tripped up by the little everyday memories that catch me when I'm not all, you know, ready to deal with them. They're like little informal and private commemorations which just unexpectedly completely sabotage my feelings. A certain turn of phrase, a piece of music, a favourite meal or a photograph or something very mundane will catch me out, and I remember and I recognise what I have lost, and of course that is acutely painful. It takes courage to remember and to come to a service like this where we are willingly opening ourselves up to those difficult feelings. So what are we doing here? Well, I think we've all come to remember because remembering is also a hugely positive and a therapeutic experience. There is comfort and there is solace, and there is meaning in memories. Memory connects us to the people who have died, and it is through acts of remembering that we do all the important work of grieving, and it is work. Memories help us to comprehend what has happened to us. They force us to recognise that our world has changed. They also help us to seek for meaning in a situation that frankly may not be amenable to reason. And finally, perhaps, if we are fortunate, memories may help us reach the stage of peaceful acceptance. That work, that important work of remembering and grieving, which I've just described very quickly, is not usually a swift process. For many of us, it takes years. Not only are there the everyday reminders to negotiate, but also the annual celebrations such as Christmas, birthdays and anniversaries. They all have a terrible poignancy for the newly bereaved, and they all have to be endured somehow. Sometimes we may be tempted to use our memories to help us to cling on to our sorrow because we feel that grief connects us with the dead person, and we don't want to relinquish that sense of closeness or fully accept the emptiness that comes with the recognition of loss. Friends, relations and colleagues may be supportive and sympathetic, certainly at first, but all too soon we're expected to just get on with it, and the well-meaning will often encourage us to fill our hours with activities and distractions instead of memories. It's true that keeping busy is a useful strategy for combating sadness. My family always know if I'm feeling really low if they see me on my hands and knees scrubbing the kitchen floor. Well, firstly, they're astonished because I can assure you I'm not the queen of housework. But scrubbing the kitchen floor is a strategy that my granny gave to me when I was a heartbroken teenager. And I have to tell you, it's never failed to make me feel better yet. But despite our busyness, we should still find time to celebrate and cherish our memories in a constructive way. There's nothing wrong with glorying in happy memories. When I visit a bereaved family to prepare for a funeral, their memories often come tumbling out in a great spillage, and I hear a biography through memories of childhood pranks and youthful indiscretions, career highs and lows, triumphs and disasters, joys and sorrows. I don't just hear about the good things. I hear about family rows, quarrels, money problems, people's irritating habits and strange obsessions. There are nearly always funny stories and laughter as well as tears, and often a whole range of other emotions too. But the really, really striking thing, and the thing that I hear most often being expressed through these memories, is love. The unconditional love between parents and children. The intimate love between soulmates, friends and family members. The care for others that is expressed in bonds between neighbours, between teachers and students, and between colleagues and comrades. Love is fundamental to the memories that I hear. And in revisiting their memories, those bereaved people I work with are acknowledging that vast reserve of positive, creative, and unselfish regard that sits in the heart of our community. You see, memories don't just connect us with the past, they also connect us to the present and to the future. Love is a living thing. It can always be with us in the present moment. The people who were part of our lives are still part of our lives, and they can continue to be part of our lives as long as we remember them. As human beings, we are hardwired to interpret what happens to us, to look for meaning and understanding. Our memories, our relationships, and our experiences all play a large part in informing those interpretations. We each have to find our own way, our own understanding, and our own way to come to terms with the losses that we have. And some of us turn to philosophy or religion. Many religious faiths include a strong tradition of remembering, and Christianity is no exception. As Jesus approached his own death, he shared a meal with his friends and he encouraged them to remember him whenever they ate bread or drank wine. This was an act of remembrance that was directly associated with the living, with all that lies ahead, not just what lies behind. Today, in commemorating our loved ones, we are not clinging to the past. Rather, we are seeking strength to continue our own lives using the gifts of love and experience which have been given to us through our relationships with them. As a society, we tend to commemorate the great and the good. But the great lives of our heroes and heroines are often not very accessible to us. Most of the people we know intimately just live ordinary lives. Lives that are unremarked and maybe unrewarded by the world at large, but they still have a profound effect on us. We love people not just for their exceptional qualities, if they have them, but for their faults and idiosyncrasies, their humanity, their very ordinariness. George Eliot expressed the impact of an ordinary life very well when she was writing about the death of one of her characters in the novel Middlemarch, and I'm just going to read a little quote now. She said, "The effect of her being on those around her was incalculably diffusive, for the growing good of the world is partly dependent on unhistoric acts, and that things are not so ill with you and me as they might have been is half owing to the number who live faithfully a hidden life and rest in unvisited tombs." I really love that idea that an ordinary life filled with unhistoric acts has an immeasurable value and affects so many people. And it's what I witness as I practice as a celebrant. I want to leave you with the notion that remembering the ordinary lives of our own dearly loved ones as we go forward is a very important and a very constructive thing to do. Those lives have provided us with some of our strongest examples and inspiration for the future. They can give us strength to continue our lives, and they give us perspective on our immediate experience. In the face of death, We remember what is important. You are remembering your significant ones by being here today. And what I hope and expect that you are remembering most is the love that you shared. I believe that love is of God and from God, though I know that not everyone can share that belief. But when we do think about our loved ones, perhaps we can all share the recognition that nothing, as we heard before, neither death nor life, neither our fears for today or our worries for tomorrow, nothing can separate us from love.